This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DTV Digest, the podcast which brings you reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema and instead went straight to DVD, Blu-ray, or streaming media. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me this week is Richard Hawes.
Hello, everybody.
And on this week's show, we've got two films which just had a very successful run at the Frightfest Film Festival in London, well, the virtual Frightfest Film Festival in London, let's say, which are Relic and Tailgate. Our short shot this week is Ark Exodus, more on that later. And then we're going to round off with our DTV throwback, The Ice Cream Man, which is, it's a film. Okay, so without further ado, let's crack on. Our first review then is Relic. Kay and her daughter Sam get word that Kay's mum Edna hasn't been seen for a while by her neighbours. They travel to her home to investigate and discover that she is indeed missing, only to turn up a couple of days later with no explanation where she has been. As they stay in the house, both Kay and Sam begin to suspect something isn't quite right with both Edna or the house. Okay, Rich, this is an Australian production.
Which surprised me.
Yeah, it did me as well, actually. But it's a very handsome-looking movie, that has to be said, as we kind of expect from Australia these days, I think. Very well-structured. It does have a bit of a measured pace, shall we say. But for my money, there is one particular dream sequence in this quite early on that Kay has about the old house, you know the sort of lodge that used to be on the property. Oh man, that disturbed me. It really did. I've got a thing about dying anyway. Every time I see a hearse in the street, I can feel a chill. And this particular sort of dream sequence was just so brilliantly, the makeup effects were just amazing in that particular thing. It just really did freak me out a little bit. It sort of, I could feel my stomach tightening, just sort of seeing this thing play out. It was very bizarre. The film is an allegory of sorts. I'm not going to go into too much about what that allegory is, but it's, the whole thing can act as a sort of a big metaphor, basically. Very well acted. It does get a bit freaky at times. What did you think of this?
Yeah, I liked it. It is very enigmatic. There's a lot of it. There's not a lot of exposition or explanation. Much of it is encouraging your interpretation of it. It's about three generations of women. So a family, and there are very few other characters in the story. It's mostly the three of them in the house or around the house, I should say. There are a few other interactions, but that's it. It starts out with the grandmother, has gone missing, and the daughter who lives far away in the city in Melbourne has called, to come and try and help or take care of her property or do whatever she can. And so she comes with her daughter, and there's disagreements from kind of the start as to what is actually happening, or because when the grandmother does turn up, she's holding her cards very close to her chest. Perhaps she doesn't even know what happened or where she's been. She's not willing, she's not very open, which is, I think you're kind of, I think even anyone can kind of relate to that kind of character, people are not, people can tend to play their cards very close to their chest, regardless of what the thing is, people, they don't want to, they feel embarrassed or they feel awkward or, they don't want to trouble someone, so I think there's something there that everyone can relate to. It's just an exaggerated kind of situation. But the way the dynamics unfold and the things that happen with the characters, things soon become very uncomfortable, very tense, and very uneasy. So there's a creeping sense of dread throughout the whole thing. Before I went in, I'd seen it being referred to as not really much, not a straight horror film. And that's very much the case for the most part. It does become kind of much more traditional horror towards in the final act, basically. I mean, there are elements throughout, but it's kind of full on at the end. I think there's some interesting metaphysical stuff that happens, which brought to mind The Grudge.
Mm-hmm.
The relic is never really specified, but I believe it's part of that lodge that you mentioned that has been used in a...
they use the stained glass window, don't they, in the front door for that used to be part of the house. Yeah, the part of the lodge. Yeah.
And it's not like they don't ever make a big deal about it. You know, this isn't like Amityville, you know, window. You know, that somebody's taken a bit of the Amityville window and they put it in their house and the house becomes haunted. But there is a touch of that. But I thought this was much more in line with something like The Witch in the Window that we watched while back. Mm-hmm. And also M. Night Shyamalan's The Visit.
Right, I haven't seen that one. What I was reminded of is a book called The House of Long Leaves. Is it House of Long Leaves or House of Leaves?
House of Leaves, the big, really complicated book that sort
of goes. That one.
Mark Z. Danielewski,
That's
think.
It, yeah.
Yeah. That was amazing. Interesting book.
It is a very interesting book.
Huge tome, and it's like the text goes upside down and around, and it spins, and then you jump forward and backwards. And a lot of the
story is actually in the footnotes as well. Mm. It's really freaky. But I was actually reminded of that book while watching, especially towards the end, when Sam goes exploring in the wardrobe. That was freaky.
Very much so, definitely.
So there are some really nice touches to this, you know, the atmosphere that there's a kid who lives next door. I can't remember what his name was now.
Jamie,
Chris Bunton played Jamie. And you know, he has a nice relationship with Sam. Obviously, they, you know, grew up sort of near each other for a while. But when she invites him in the house, his whole demeanor changes and sort of, not going in. And then you find out later in the film why, which is both sort of scary and tragic in equal measure. But yeah, it's, the bit with the bed as well, right? When sort of Edna's sort of saying, oh, there's someone under my bed.
Mm-hmm.
That was really well done. Very, very, very subtle, but freaky.
Edna is played by Robin Nevin. She's an Australian actress, but her daughter is played by Emily Mortimer from London.
Yeah.
So, because I was watching it, and I was thinking, is Emily Mortimer Australian? I didn't know. and it's like, no, they just cast her, you know. I think she does a really good job in the role. I was quite convinced.
It's interesting, isn't it? You know, exactly. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of British actors go to America and sort of nail the American accent. But you don't sort of hear too many going to Australia and nailing the Australian accent, you know, which is quite interesting. Sounded fine to me, that's for sure, you know, as an Anglophile, but I'd be interested to know how it went down in Melbourne, say, because that's where she's meant to be from.
Yeah.
But there you go. The film looks great. You know, they make good use of the forest that surrounds the house. You know, you have like a search party going on, and there's other stuff that happens in there. But yeah, it's the dream sequences that just like really, really, really freak me out a little bit, I must admit. But there you go. Yeah, so special effects, such as they are, you know, they're very few and far between, really just in those sort of dream sequences, but they are really, really good.
Yeah, it was kind of that. It's very much in the vein. I mean, this isn't, I'm not saying it's an indie movie. It's a very well-funded film, but it feels closer to some of the indie movies that we've watched from like the Horror Collective,
yeah,
that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it wouldn't have surprised me if it had been picked up by the Horror Collective. It would fit in with their eclectic style, shall we say. Thoroughly enjoyed
it. And it's the first time feature from writer-director Natalie Erica James, who prior to this had done several shorts and had various production roles on films such as Upgrade, for example.
Oh, yeah.
As a crew member. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and sound. And so she's got quite a wide variety of experience before sort of taking the helm of her first big production. I think she's done really well.
Absolutely. Yeah, this looks great. It did really well at Fright Fest, as I mentioned at the top of the show. When's it out? Do we know?
It's out now. You can watch it on demand. It'll be on DVD in January.
There we go. So, and scores, Rich, where are we going to score this?
I have a solid 7 out of 10. High 7 for me.
Yeah, I agree. It's as I said, it's a measured pace. You know, you need a bit of patience with it at times. It keeps us like Edna. It keeps its cards quite close to its chest until certain things reveal themselves later on. But yeah, it's a solid 7, definitely. Go check it out. Our next review is Tailgate. Poor old Hans is having a bit of a stressful day, having to take his wife and two young daughters to visit his parents for a birthday celebration, which has some somber overtones. Whilst on the motorway, he gets frustrated with a van driver driving too slow and starts tailgating him, not suspecting that this incident was going to make his day a hell of a lot worse. This is from the Netherlands. Oh, what was it originally called, Rich? You nailed it a minute ago.
Umperkleef.
Yeah. And it's an interesting film in that there are no likable characters in it. Everyone in this film is an asshole, which is really, really weird. Poor old Hans, as I said, he's stressed to fuck. He's having to go to this birthday party because it's likely to be his dad's last, because he's got dementia and he's on his way out. He's stressed by that. He's stressed by his wife for dragging her heels, getting ready. He's stressed by his two kids who are constantly fighting in the back of the car. And then in front of him is this white van in the fast lane, just hanging there. And not letting him pass or anyone else pass, and it's getting very frustrated. And then later on, they pull into a service station and get confronted by this guy who seems really polite but really menacing at the same time. The trouble is, Hans is one of these people who I didn't notice what kind of car he's driving, but I'm pretty sure it must be an Audi or a BMW, because that's the kind of guy he is.
Yeah, I think it was a Volvo.
Right. Oh, I'm going against type then. But he's one of these people who just won't back down from a stupid argument. You know, the guy wants an apology, he refuses to give one, so it escalates and he ends up being chased, or his family gets chased for the rest of the film. Rich, over to you. What do you think of this one?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. The basic premise of it is a variation on Duel. Steven Spielberg's TV movie, right down to the fact that it all takes place in daylight. This is one of the funny things about the poster.
Yeah,
UK release, and I think other places is it's a couple of people in the headlights of a vehicle. You know,
it all happens in one afternoon.
Yeah, it all happens completely in the daylight. There's no dusk. there's nothing. It's all broad daylight, which is refreshing. And I found the film to be kind of conventionally unconventional, because it follows all the same kind of beats that you would expect of a psycho thriller of this type, as in the case of Duel or more recently the Joyride / Roadkill series.
The Russell Crowe film that's just been out recently, Unhinged.
I haven't seen that, so I
can't. No, But a similar sort of thing, you know. I haven't seen it, but just the trailer. But yeah, similar sort of idea.
Yeah.
A guy being wronged on the motorway and flipping out.
I wasn't sure. I'm definitely interested to see that one. I wasn't sure if that was kind of going more of a falling down kind of way, but I don't know. But there are certain thematic similarities in all these versions. But in this case, you know, in the case of Duel, you never saw, spoiler alert, you never saw the driver properly. You never even hear him or anything. In this, you meet the killer straight
right
away.
Right at the beginning. So
broad daylight.
What I like about
starts
that,
talking.
Yeah, what I like about that sequence, and they could have easily gone in media res with this. Mm. They could have picked any point of the second half of the film and sort of go boom, and then sort of have a caption saying, "Ooh, earlier that morning." But no, they decided to set something up to sort of show how ruthless and merciless this guy is. You know, he'd had some sort of spat with a cyclist, and he'd sort of chased him down, and sort of did him in basically.
They never elaborate on it, do they? You're still left to think, I think what must have happened is this. I think. You know, like they don't do a flashback or any kind of further explanation. You come in the middle of this encounter, and you're there with them until the conclusion, which is the pre-title sequence, and then that bit is never referred to again.
No, what was interesting? Well, I'll come on to that in a minute. But what was interesting as well was it shows how sort of methodical he is. After he hits the cyclist, he sort of pulls over, he gets the cones out around his van, he does it all sort of proper and sort of methodical, which was quite amusing. The thing you sort of say about him, you know, that sequence not being referred to again, what I thought was going to happen, there's a bit where Hans has a big argument with him and he takes his phone. Or he holds up a phone saying, "Look, I've run out of battery," sort of thing, so I can't call the police on you. And I thought, that's the cyclist's phone, and he's going to use it to sort of get his fingerprints on it and frame him for that or something. Oh, yeah, but no, it was even more simpler than that, which was quite good. One of the other interesting things with this is that, you know, the van driver guy, he's pretty much trolling for trouble, isn't he? You know, he knows what he's doing. By sitting in that fast lane, I'm just going to do the normal speed limit sort of thing, you know. He knows there's loads of people behind him. And he's just sort of...
He's absolutely looking for trouble, definitely.
He's absolutely looking for it. So, yeah, which is quite interesting.
He's baiting. That's what he's doing.
Yeah, that's exactly what he's done. He slung his hook. Seeing who's going to react, and then, you know, so he can get all righteous and sort of highfalutin on them. But, you know, to a certain degree, I'm thinking, Hans, you had this coming to you. There's an interesting bit as well where he tells his kids something. He sort of says, this guy, he's middle-aged, you know, he can't control... He's got no respect from his family, so he's taking it out on other drivers. And his wife's looking at him going, "Yeah, that's you." But yeah, that's funny. There is a genuinely funny sequence in this as well, after sort of things had escalated, and the police give them sort of an escort to their to the parents' house. And they suddenly realise just how many white vans there are on the road, and they're getting more and more freaked out, going, "Oh my God, there he is! Oh no, there he is over there!" sort of thing. It just just keeps going and going until they sort of pass a whole car park full of white vans. It's just going absolutely crazy. So this is a very enjoyable film. Who was it directed by?
It is directed by. Ludwig Krims. I butchered that, I'm sure.
I'm sure we have, yeah.
Ludwig Sims, I'll just say, and that'll leave it at that. But
yeah. I'd say it's his first film released in the UK.
Wouldn't surprise me, because we don't get
I'm pretty sure. No, it's a different film. I was looking back, there's one he's got called Sickos, which I thought we might have had a release over here. I'm not sure if it has.
Okay. No. Anyway. I don't recognise it, but the sensibility is very, you know, Blackley comic.
Mm.
And, you know, the a while back we reviewed Prey.
Yes, Freud, the Dick Mars film.
Mm-hmm. And I think if anyone, you know, has watched any Dick Mars films, they'll enjoy this. It's got the same kind of dark humour to it. You know, it's really well done. Say very, very familiar, but new at the feeling quite new at the same time. The killer's got this interesting means of terminating his prey.
Yes, as it were. Very painful way. So,
because you don't quite know why or if this is if, because basically it's like an exterminator kind of outfit that he puts on and stuff, and I don't know whether that's like his day job or whatever. We literally learn nothing about him in that way. It's very much like Duel or Rogue, or well, I suppose they were truckers, so you knew what sort of job they had, but with this guy you don't know his family life or anything. They don't go that far. It would be interesting if they explored this a bit more and, you know, return to the character, you know, as in typical horror franchise fashion, as to what they could do with it. But it does end in it's got quite a wicked ending on it.
I mean the performances in this, it's interesting. The terror that the kids are faced with throughout this film, you know, if it was an American one, they'd sort of like grin and bear it almost. But you know, these kids are absolutely terrified by what's going on. They're going to be traumatized for life, probably. You know, it's really, really harsh. And the thing is, because it's from the Netherlands, which is still a relatively unknown quantity to us in terms of, you know, what their sort of appetite for film is, all bets are off as to who's going to survive this and who isn't. You know, you really do sort of get that feeling that you can't really sort of pinpoint who's going to die, who's going to survive at any point during this. Whereas if it was an American film, then, you know, they'd all be numbered, basically, right? That's the first one, that's the second one, et cetera, et cetera. But here, you literally do not know how things are going to develop.
Now, I'd be very interested to see if there's a Hollywood remake of this, what they decide to do with, because I'm sure they would make it just like, you know, all the others. And the great thing about this version is that it completely stands apart from those.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Scores on the doors, Rich?
I've had a lot more fun with this than with Relics. I'm going to go for an 8 on this one.
I'm going to stick with a 7. It is more fun than Relic, but as I said at the beginning of the review, I just couldn't get on with any of the characters. There's no one here to really root for. But there is one thing. I mean, you know, Hans is sort of your typically fallible driver. There is one funny bit at the beginning where he almost has an accident. And one of his daughters points it out. So, Dad, you almost crashed. And he's like, no, 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 it was fine. I was in complete control. And I'm watching that thinking, yeah, that's just about every dad. You know, every dad has gone through that sort of experience.
There is some really good stunt driving.
Yes, there is. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, there's that whole sequence, isn't there, where they go into this sort of quiet neighborhood and just wreck it, you know, which is great. You know, the number of people on cycles in Holland, as we know, you know, sort of nation of cyclists. But crazy film.
The other funny thing about the killer is he just seems completely not worried about any police intervention whatsoever.
Not at all.
It's like it's not even it's like even likely that it'll be a problem. the police appear in a couple of scenes, but it's not like Yeah, it's. Yeah. I don't know what the situation. I don't know if that's a commentary on, you know, what the policing's like.
I thought it was more a case of him being so super righteous. So you know, he feels he's in the right so much that he's not worried. You know, if the police turn up, then that's, you know, obviously I'll be able to tell them what happened and they'll just agree with me. You know, but there you go.
Yeah, it's quite a narcissistic kind of character, I think.
Yeah,
definitely. But in a completely different way to the the main character, who's you know, more aggressively narcissistic.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, he's all fiery emotion. The other guy's just like totally cold, isn't he?
Yeah.
But for any drivers out there, you know, people are, you're going to sort of see some home truths in this. I think you know, little bits of behaviour you're going to feel guilty of having done yourself at some point, probably. But yeah, it's a ride, that's for sure. It's a hell of a ride. So a 7 and an 8 for Tailgate. Our short shot this week is Ark Exodus. They look like us and sound like us, but they are not us. Doppelgangers from a parallel universe have secretly assumed the identities of their opposites. To stop the threat of a mass invasion, Structure, a covert agency that polices interdimensional travel, has sent its best assassin to stop them. Okay, Rich, straight over to you with this one.
This is a new film from martial artist and filmmaker Johnny Yong Bosch. It popped up on the old Twitter feed. He was saying he made it, he shot it just before lockdown, and he's basically been editing it since. It's a 39-minute film in which he directs and stars. He's the sort of assassin at the heart of the film, who is sent on a mission, discovers things aren't all that he thought they were, and, you know, almost without wishing to give it too much away, you know, it's kind of, he has to make a choice on, you know, which side he's going to go. It's very familiar kind of story, which is a shame, really, because I felt like we might get something a bit more novel. I'm not going to cite particular examples, but it does, you do feel like, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
I'm sure I can think of like 3 or 4, you know,
at least one Marvel film. Yep.
Yeah. which has done this. Johnny Yong Bosch is a very proficient screenwriter. He started out mainly known as one of the Power Rangers. More recently, he's become, in the last 20 years, kind of a go-to voice actor. So much anime and stuff. It's unbelievable. It's got about 300 or 400 credits to his name in total, including Power Rangers and stuff. This is the first thing I think he's directed since he co-directed a film called Devon's Ghost, Legend of the Bloody Boy, which was like a teen slasher movie, which just happened to have these crazy Hong Kong kung fu martial arts sequences in, which made it quite notable. And he did that with, directed that with Koichi Sakamoto from Power Rangers and stuff. That was released as Sword in the UK, worth a look. But this one, I think, is the first time he's directing on his own. And he's got his old pal, Jason Narvi, as his handler, I suppose, who's the guy who sends him on the mission. Mm-hmm. And he has sort of various dialogues with. So he was Skull in Power Rangers and really hasn't had much of a career as an actor since then. I think he's gone off and done other things. So it's quite interesting to see him back and for them doing fight scenes stuff. They did a film called Wicked Game, also called The Heist, Extreme Heist in 2002. So it's been quite a long time since they worked together, I think. Yeah. Johnny Yong Bosch has also done a film called Broken Path, which is highly recommended. So I thought it's okay. It's worth seeing. It's very stylishly made. But for me, I expected a bit more from the story.
Yeah, story-wise, I think it was quite obvious the direction it was going to end up going into. Although it did leave it quite late to sort of, you know, head into that direction. So yeah, we have a couple of mini missions to begin with. He's got a girlfriend who works as a waitress and this sort of thing. The middle section is a little bit padded out.
They emphasize the drama, don't they?
Yeah, there's a lot of drama going on.
Yeah,
but it looks great. You know, it's very well shot, very well filmed. The martial arts bits are, you know, quite highly edited. You know, there's a lot of editing going on.
I was quite disappointed by that aspect because of knowing, you know, seeing. I mean, obviously, 15 or 10 plus years have passed since some of Johnny Yong Bosch's best stuff. But yeah, I was hoping for more wide angles.
Yeah, it is a bit close up. But having said that, you know, it's still, you know, they all look great. All the sort of main protagonists, you know, look great during their fight scenes, you know, which are sort of mingled together. There is a nice touch as well. Towards the end, there's this fight where everyone's got these sort of neon batons. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's sort of a cross between a knife and a lightsaber kind of thing. Which look great as well, and you know, a great sort of visual look to it as they've been sort of swung around, and then that sort of final battle as well, in amongst the sort of, you know, the plastic curtains, that was really well lit and sort of choreographed as well. The sort of, you know, ends up sort of divulging into a knife fight. Yeah, so it's great to look at. It's entertaining. It's just not particularly original.
I tell you, the sort of level I'm thinking of this being at is, you remember, although the choreography in this other film was a lot better, was the Jean-Paul Lee short film, Division?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I thought the structure and the sort of, the start, I mean, you know, like the warehouse locations and all that kind of stuff, the sort of aesthetic and the design of the film, was sort of in that league. This one's much more sci-fi, and they've got, you know, the portals and things added in. But in terms of about a 30-minute short film, 30 plus minutes, I thought they were sort of comparable. But you know, this is, if you're going to this for the martial arts action based on Bosch's previous work, I think there's going to be some disappointment. It's good to see him back in front of the camera.
Yeah.
And behind the camera as well. Mm-hmm. I'd hoped for more, unfortunately. He released this he was promoting it on Twitter and stuff as a limited availability. So it's around, but it might not be that easy to find at the present time as of listening to this. But do look out for it. Mm-hmm. It is worth a look.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if he was sort of like putting it behind a paywall or something.
It might be that it turns up on Amazon Prime, or it could be a pay-per-view thing on Vimeo or something. We're just not sure at the moment.
He does mention on Twitter that he funded this himself. You know, it wasn't like crowdfunded or anything like that. So you know, it's quite possible he might want to sort of make a little bit of money back from it. But he did it as a sort of labor of love, as he said. He filmed it back in January before lockdown and everything. It's been spending his sort of waking hours sort of editing it all together and sort of sort out the special effects and things. So we don't score the shorts, as you all know, but I like this. Yeah, I can see where you're coming from, Rich, you know, with a certain level of sort of disappointment, sort of wanting a bit more. But I think if you're a fan of his work, this is definitely worth checking out. Our DTV throwback this week is The Ice Cream Man. Four young friends who make up the Rocketeer Gang come to suspect that there may be something weird going on in their neighborhood, especially where the new ice cream man is concerned. Right. So, Rich, we were sort of like at a loss to sort of come up with a DTV throwback on the fly, since what we originally planned couldn't happen.
I'm never at a loss. I've always got a list.
You've always got a list. Okay. Yeah. Now, you know,
I've been wanting to see this for years.
In a week that has Tailgate, which is a very entertaining and screwball kind of movie, that isn't the weirdest film that I've seen for this episode. That would go to this thing. So we've got these, you know, these bunch of kids who are all best friends. One of them is called Fatso, but isn't actually fat as such, even though people keep sort of having a go at his weight. He's just not fat at all.
He's wearing a pillow, I think.
Basically, yeah. And we've got this ice cream man who's absolutely, you know, just crazy and very sinister. You know, we see inside his ice cream van and the sort of the quality of his ice cream, and there's like cockroaches in it and all this sort of shit, which is, you know, enough to put you off a Cornetto for a long time. And things just get weirder and weirder as they go on. There's some really strange dream sequences which don't really make any sense until later on in the film. His landlady, who used to be a nurse, we find out, and you know, the weird stuff going there. It's just bizarre. It really is. Bizarre and grotesque are the two words that I need to describe this film. Your thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that is fair. It is quite bizarre. I first remember seeing the poster art and that around the time it came out, probably in like Fangoria magazine or something. This was made in 1995. We didn't get it over here until 2006 when it got a DVD release on Film 2000. I didn't see it then. I was still holding off. I think part of me was just, it's one of those films that I'd always been so curious about, but I thought could never meet my expectations. And I think that's definitely the case, that it was just not what I didn't get out of it as much as I had hoped. That said, I did find it quite interesting. It kind of came back up on my radar because Crap Film Club had posted some comments about it at the time that we were considering what we were going to be doing. And, I was saying to them that I wasn't sure whether to watch it or not, and they were like, "I'll give it a go. You know, it's not good, but I think you'll find it interesting." And I think that's I do concur with that. I'm a fan of a 1992 film called Dr. Giggles, which seems to have been quite an inspiration on this. But the other film that seemed, or miniseries, I guess, that seems to have been a big influence on this was Stephen King's It.
There is elements of that to this, yeah. Now, there's two performances in this we need to talk about, Rich. First of all, we've got Clint Howard as the ice cream man, younger brother of Ron Howard, Richie Cunningham and famous director and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And he gives a pretty bizarre performance as the ice cream man, and we're not sort of entirely sure how nefarious he is at certain points. It turns out to be full-on batshit crazy as later on in the film, but yeah, there's some weird shit there. But we have to talk about Jan Michael Vincent,
who's acting like he's in a completely different movie.
Oh my god, it is so funny. Jan Michael Vincent as an actor, after his Airwolf days, he had a lot of issues with drug and alcohol.
And his accident and stuff.
And his accident and all this sort of stuff. And it's a miracle that he turned up on set sober for this. But even so, it's like you can picture the director sort of going, okay, Jan, you're in a mental hospital. All the mental patients have gotten loose. They're chasing after you. What do you do? And he goes, "I'm just going to stroll casually out of here with my sunglasses on and just look around slightly bemused," which is exactly what it does. Meanwhile, his partner's going, sort of running and sort of, you know, punching
people in the face. I think it's Lee Majors' son.
Is it? Oh, my God.
I think Lee Majors the second. So I think it's Lee Majors' son.
Bloody hell, that's hilarious. But so you got those two performances for sure. It does get really, really freaky. when they discover the asylum and everything. Just really, really bizarre.
Which all again, stuff... all seems out of Dr. Giggles. I don't know if you remember in Dr. Giggles, there's the inmates take over the asylum scene. And that's exactly what they've done here. But the asylum is basically like a big round room with nothing in it, really. It's like a big empty room.
It's a weird place. Yeah. There's some sort of, you know, sort of grisly moments here and there. Certain characters get killed that you sort of wished hadn't, you know, you go, oh, wish that person hadn't died. But, you know, but overall, it was just really, really strange.
Yeah, well, it's kind of got that, this is what made me think of like it, because it's focused on the kids for quite a lot of the time.
It is, yeah.
And it's kind of, you know, Goonies-ish kind of stuff going on where they're trying to investigate. Also, the other thing that made me think of more recently was Summer of 84, which is probably the best. I mean, that's better than it and stuff, I think. I thought Summer of 84.
Isn't it? Really stop me if I'm getting this wrong, but isn't there a scene where one of the kids goes home to sort of tell them what, you know, what's happened? And his parents are like having a full-on argument, because isn't one of their dads having an affair?
Yes.
With the thing, and you know, and
that's where
his wife goes, well, you know, I drove past the bank earlier and it was closed. Where were you? Sort of thing. And, well, yeah. He's like, well, I was getting a drink. We'll sit to you. But anyway, as you said, it focused on the kids a lot, and then sort of towards the end, it sort of shifted focus a bit back to sort of the two cops.
Yeah, which again is what Dr. Giggles does. It's got that little procedural investigation-y kind of bit happening apart from the teenage action. So they're sort of crossing into those areas. The thing I found a bit awkward was Ice Cream Man kind of jumps straight in without really anything setting it up.
A little bit of backstory, but well, in kind of flashbacks
just,
and things.
It's kind of, you know, the scenes just, it's just a bunch of scenes. It doesn't feel like a cohesive story that's happening. We get Clint Howard turning up in his creepy Ice Cream Man, which, you know, nobody acknowledges really how creepy and weird it is. He's got like bars on the windows and stuff. There's a nice little visual gag in it, which is that instead of on the back of the truck saying "Watch out for children." They've scrubbed out four. It just says "Watch out, children," which I thought was really nice. But the other notable thing about it really is the cast. You've already mentioned Jan Michael Vincent's oddly being in it.
Yeah,
Olivia Hussey is the sort of crazy nurse landlady character. Again, she feels like she's in a completely different movie to the one that Jan Michael Vincent's in. She's like really kooky, overacting kind of character, and Jan Michael Vincent's just sort of playing it completely, you know, deadpan and, you know, not bothering. But then we've also got David Warner, who I love. You know, I love David Warner. He's like a crazy Ned Flanders kind of character. He's the local minister. He's got a few scenes, and there's also David Norton from
American Werewolf.
But I could not recognize him, so I don't know who he was in it.
I think he was the dad. It was the bank manager dad, I think.
Was he? Ah, okay.
I think.
Yeah. So it's a pretty. Oh, and Sandahl Bergman there. I think she's done a few things as well. But the.
Of course she has. Yeah.
So I know the name, but
she was in Conan the Barbarian.
Oh, and Red Sonja and Hell Comes to Frogtown and stuff like that. Oh, it looks like she was also in Jim Wynorski's The Assault that we watched, a while back. Yeah, so the cast is really good. The execution is not great.
Really bad.
I think if they'd had a bit more money and they did need a better script. I thought the kids did fine.
The dialogue with the kids was actually really good. You know, it was sort of believable dialogue between the kids. And if you know, I actually liked that aspect of it. I didn't like the Ice Cream Man. hit that character and his van and everything, I just found was just too grotesque. But the kid element, I thought they actually worked really well.
Yeah, and the why they couldn't hire a fat kid to play fat kid, I don't understand, because that just looked weird. That's very strange.
Well, maybe it's a commentary about fat shaming, you know.
I don't think this.
In a parallel dimension, who knows? Yeah.
If anything, it goes the other way around. It's just like they could. It's like they could have easily hired a kid who looked the part, but instead they were like, no, he must be this young, fresh-faced, handsome boy.
That's true.
And we'll just sort of put a little tummy on him with this pillow. You know, he should look like Chunk or whatever from Goonies. You know,
yeah, that's probably
what the character's supposed to be.
Yeah, that's probably what the script said, but there you go.
It's probably someone's son or whatever, I don't know. But anyway, this was, we found this on Prime, and I think it was at the end of the film, a Vinegar Syndrome logo comes up. Right. So I don't know if they, I think this had like a Blu-ray release or something, that when they've released it online. I presume this is an official release. The quality of the print was decent. It wasn't amazing, but it was pretty good.
There's actually two versions of this on Amazon Prime, because not only do we have the actual film, but there's also the Riff Tracks version as well, where they, you know, if you're a fan of Riff Tracks, or if you remember Mystery Science Theater 3000, where they, you know, a cast sort of talk over making jokes about the film, they've done a version of that that's available on Amazon Prime as well. Doesn't really add a lot to it, I must admit, but it is quite amusing, if you like that sort of thing, which I do.
Yeah, I keep meaning to check out some of that stuff. I've never really done it. I don't think I've watched any of those or any of Mystery Science Theater. I mean, I knew of them, but I don't think I've taken the time.
The Mystery Science Theater ones, I found some of their sort of references just so obscure. You know, I just didn't really sort of see, you know, couldn't see what they were referencing to. But the Riff Track stuff's quite fun. Especially the live ones. They do some live ones, which are really good. But anyway, that's off the point. And I think we've finished with the Ice Cream Man, so that's the end of this week's show. Do check us out on Facebook and Twitter at the DTV Digest. There will be links in the footnotes, along with the link to the trailer for Ark Exodus, because as we said, it's only available for a short period. And I've also put the trailers for Tailgate and The Relic. So thank you for listening, and tune in again next time.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments, and tune in again next time.